Hey y'all, having a disaster podcast, Brett and I find it really important to talk about some disaster relief that is much needed for Australia. If you visit the description or PDS podcast on Twitter or Instagram, our bio links will lead you to some ways to help. Thank you for taking a moment to listen, and we're thinking about all of our friends in Australia now.
I don't know. Duck and cover, bitches.
Nina, stop smelling the cat's butt.
This is a normal occurrence over a video chat with Brett.
Hi, guys. Hi, welcome to Particularly Dangerous Situation.
PDS, babes, PDS.
PDS. So for those of you who don't know, we're a disaster podcast. We do man-made and...
Homemade,
God made.
Mother made. Yeah, I was going to say mother made from like Mother Earth made.
Yes, all the maids.
God made.
All of them. What if God made tornadoes?
Oh. I was going to actually sing the song, but never mind. What if God was the disaster? Nope, doesn't. Not enough.
Oh, syllables. And we just lost three more people listening.
Yeah.
So. Damn it, we lost our Christian listeners. Krishna listeners.
Krishna, yeah, damn Krishna, those Krishna listeners. Me and Brett are very awkward today, I think. Well, I'm very awkward, and I think I'm rubbing off. I'm like, I was trying to talk earlier, my mouth, as per usual, is not doing what I want it to do.
Yeah, that's fun. That was a fun time.
Yeah, it's always fun.
And but, I have like rosy red Santa cheeks from drinking half a bottle of champagne already. So, woo!
I know I'm a sober Sally at this second, but that might change when I get done with our recording. I just don't want to go downstairs right now. I record in my fake closet. So to go get a drink, I have to go downstairs to my real refrigerator to grab the stuff.
The real refrigerator, not the fake one that's upstairs. Because that's just, it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if there's any update. I've been knitting up a storm. My husband got me those knitting needles and dying. I finished a hat and I'm just working on new hats and doing a lot of selfish knitting.
Good. Good for you. Sometimes selfish knitting is what you need to do.
It really is. I just got to get that craft on. It's been a rough year, so it's good to get that craft on.
Yeah.
So Brett, not only does she have her new mic now, but it is set up on the boom. And the pop filter by her lovely husband setting it up.
I'm just making like water noises.
I like this.
It's actually popping
like water.
Yeah.
I still feel like it's a lot clearer than it was before. So
much clearer. So much clearer for sure.
You guys can tell us what you think of the audio. I can't hear myself when I talk. I don't hear myself in my headphones. I only hear.
I kind of can, but it's like, I've hated my voice since I was a little kid. Like I can't stand my own voice. I'm like, ugh, you know, there's an episode of Bob's Burgers where like Gail makes Bob take her on a sled, like a makeshift sled back to his house. So it's like his sister-in-law and she's got a sprained ankle. And so I'm sitting there watching it and she goes, Bob, call out for her cat. Right. So she's like, call him out. And he was like, he's your cat. You call him. She goes, oh, we know he can't stand the sound of my voice. And he's like, oh my God.
Oh my God. I am not the biggest fan of my voice, but more and more I edit the podcast, less and less I care. I realize and I have to listen to double check that everything went through because I've definitely had to re-edit.
Yeah, podcasts. No, you've got the harder job of the two of us because you're like listening and remixing and like, I can't
Don't worry.
Sound better.
I'll be making you do more stuff soon. Don't worry. I'm going to have three math classes next term.
That's true.
There's definitely going to be some. Well, you were super intense, like a lot of stuff going on at the end of this year too.
Yes.
That's why I was like, you do you, what you need to do, boo, and then we'll go from there.
It was a nutty year. I can't even begin to.
Exactly.
No.
And then I'll be taking three math classes and two PE classes, and I'll be at school five
You're
days a week.
You're taking PE?
Yeah, I have to get enough credits because I have to be a full-time student and my math classes are for some reason only 3 credits, even though they're like 400 level. I'm taking body sculpt and I'm taking yoga.
Cool. Okay. Hella, you get your fitness on for school credits. Why not?
Yeah, it's great. And I'm going to look hella good when I graduate.
Love it.
But yeah, so I'm taking those. So I'm on campus 2 days a week. I'm on, no, 4 days. Oh God. Oh, 4 days a week. I'm on campus till 6:30.
So guys, we've got an amazing episode for you today. I'm super stoked.
Yeah.
Lots of really cool information. I don't have mine quite set out the way I wanted it to, because I wanted to take a little more time to do it like our last podcast for our fabulous podcaster in crime, so to speak, Michelle, did an amazing job with giving us some awesome data and did an incredible outline, whatever.
I knew what you meant. I was following.
Yeah, I know. Of the data, and we're like, wow, this is awesome. Like, I'm totally gonna, so I'm gonna try and start taking some tips from her. You'll see a couple of nods to her today in what I'm going through and how I go through it. But overall, I'm just gonna throw it at you, y'all. So duck and cover. I'm gonna throw it at y'all.
Hella. Yeah, mine is short. No matter what I did with mine, it was short, but I did find some personal experiences. So I thought that was interesting that like were documented at the time.
Yeah. Same. I found a couple and I was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. So, one of the things we want to tell you as always is if you are worried about disasters, like the ones we discuss, get yourself ready and, go to this website. Bree, what website is that people can go to and get ready?
Ready.gov. Check it out now. Ready.gov on your internet browser.
Also, we'll take a sponsorship. No, I'm just kidding. No, we wouldn't dare take a sponsorship. We love that website because it's a wealth of information. And although that, there is many times we do not like said government, this particular website is very well maintained and it's got a lot of amazing information. So you should check it out. If you are in an area where you're subject to floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, snowstorms, whatever the case may be, or you think you might be in danger of something a little bit more man-made, like some kind of chemical issue or whatever, you could always be prepared by using ready.gov. So please go check them out and make sure that you are prepared.
Yeah. And also talking about ready.gov, Brett was talking about a few episodes ago about the FEMA app, which sends you alerts. And I signed up and now I get probably more alerts than I need, but I'd rather be over. And it's not like I don't even get them every day. But if there's a storm, I got one for flooding and, it's good to be prepared and it tells you how long the alert's going for. So I do suggest that.
Yeah. These days with climate change, I would say it's a safe bet to have that on your phone, just like having DoorDash. You don't use it all the time, but like when you're really craving something and you're drunk and high and you can't get in the car, what are you going to do?
DoorDash.
So,
or if you're like me, you have $77 in DoorDash credit. What am I doing? DoorDashing.
What are we going to do? DoorDash. If you're concerned, worried, yada, 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 for sure. By all means, please download the app because that way you have a little safety net. You know, you can always feel very safe. So,
and that makes me also think about the Red Cross app that also tells you when things are going on, what to do in those emergencies also. There's so many resources.
There's so many resources. Did you know there's a pet first aid app? I've downloaded that on my phone.
What? I didn't know that. Yeah. I'm going to have to get that on my phone.
So I see that Bree is furiously doing some knitting on her end.
Well,
here.
I'm unknotting.
Oh, Jesus. Oh my God. You guys, if you can see this knot, please screenshot that so we can put this on social media. Oh my God. What is that? That's like, when Clark Griswold goes, oh, got a little knot here. Hands it over to his son. That looks like spaghetti. That's a hot mess.
Yeah,
that
is not I just screenshot knot. Some of it. So in case
I disagree that it's not something small, that is
no, large. But it gives me something to do while I'm listening. Sometimes it's good to multitask for me. So you want to go first?
So I was going to say, so I'll go first. I'm actually super excited about mine because it is local.
I'm super excited about yours.
Yeah.
I know so this I time.
Have, yeah. I did tell her ahead of time. I was like, great. This is what I'm going to do. I'm so excited about it. So I am doing the San Francisco 1906 earthquake. Yeah.
That was a noise.
I'm pretty stoked about this because it is very local to me. I am in the Bay Area. I'm in San Jose. So just south of San Francisco, about 30, 45 minutes, depending on traffic. Actually, I should probably say 30 to an hour 30, depending on traffic.
Yeah.
Because that's more like it. It's definitely super duper intense traffic. I want to say I want to give you some background, but this is kind of all willy-nilly all over the place because I was finding all this amazing information. Mm-hmm. SFmuseum.net, earthquake.usgs.gov, Wikipedia, AmericanHistorama.org, all kinds of really great information out there. A lot of it saying kind of along the same lines of the same thing, but there's discrepancies here and there, as there always is with weather. The earthquake, the cause of the earthquake was a rupture along the Tamales-Portola fault line. It was later renamed the San Andreas Fault, so we all know where that is.
Yes.
The San Andreas Fault happens to run literally right smack through the middle of the city of San Francisco.
It also runs very close to my hometown, Paso Robles.
Yep. The April 18th, 1906 earthquake ranks as one of the most significant earthquakes of all time. Today, the importance is measured by in the amount of knowledge that was gained because of its size. So because it was so huge, it became like this sort of pinnacle of research, you know, that everybody's, we have to look at this. We have to look. This was like one of the biggest earthquakes ever, and it caused so much damage. So a lot of people were sort of propelled to want to research it. It ruptured 296 miles of the San Andreas Fault. So the longest rupture.
That
it took, yes, so it's huge. From San Juan Bautista to Cape Mendocino. As a comparison, just so you know, the Loma Prieta that I discussed a few episodes back was 25 miles.
Oh, so it's like four times? Oh, God, eight times.
A lot more, yeah. 296 miles.
Oh, my God. So almost 10 times. Can I math? Yeah. Hold on.
Can you math?
20,
can you math?
20 is 15 times more.
Yes.
20 and 100 is 5 times. So about 5 times more.
Get in your bed. Yes. Yeah.
15 insane, times right? more. Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
We thought at the time that Loma Prieta occurred, it was extremely damaging. You know, we were talking about how bridges collapsed and people were dying. I mean, that had all the news media attention.
Yeah.
But that was 25 miles. That was it. The scientific evidence gained from this earthquake allowed a gentleman named H.F. Reed from Johns Hopkins University. It allowed him to formulate the elastic rebound theory. And I said, get into that later. That is today the principal model of the earthquake cycle. So Professor H.F. Reed of Johns Hopkins University forms the basis of our modern understanding of earthquakes and describes how the Earth's crust gradually and elastically distorts with accumulating plate motion until it suddenly returned to its undistorted state by rapid slip along a fault, releasing the years of accumulated strain, and in the process, generating seismic waves that produce the shaking.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew? So I was kind of there was actually a couple things on the USGS site that were really super, super scientific. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to dive too deep, but it's fascinating.
Yeah,
about like slip versus actually something moving and so on.
Yeah, so. Yeah. The slip versus there's like going in, separating, slipping, or like side by side. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different types of the way earthquakes can happen, of how the plates are moving with our way or towards
each other. And depending on the plates, how they move, how it affects the actual surface of the planet.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At 5:12 a.m., and there's, of course, discrepancy because some people are saying it's 5:15, blah, blah, blah. But I think it depended on where you were and how deep asleep you were. Because it's 5 in the morning, you know, so some people sleep right through it. 5:12 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, a foreshock occurred with sufficient force to be felt throughout the Bay Area. The actual earthquake happened about 20 to 25 seconds later, with the epicenter occurring near San Francisco. The city shook violently for 45 to 60 seconds. So I read copious amounts of firsthand experience, and people were saying that they were thrown from their beds. Their bed was rotating and moving up, down, sideways, all four ways. They had people who were falling downstairs, hearing china breaking, people screaming, etc. It was just kind of like this absolute chaos.
Yeah.
It was felt all the way from Southern Oregon all the way to south of LA. Damn. And inland as far as Nevada. So pretty intense shaking. Intensity was measured on the modified Mercalli intensity scale, or MMI. In SF that day, it was about an 8 or 9 along many areas along the rupture. The magnitude, which is slightly measured slightly differently. And I actually posted this website at earthquakeusgs.com because I wanted to kind of jump back here. So it says 7.7 to 8.3. Okay.
That is so, a big earthquake.
Right. But it's also a big difference, right? From one to the other. Yeah,
it is. Because there wasn't like 33 times difference per 1.0. Like, because remember when I did an earthquake and I broke down like what the difference was per magnitude.
Right. So this was based on different models. Okay. So the 7.7 came from David Wald, Hiro Kanamori, Donald Hemberger, and Thomas Heaton at Caltech in USGS. They studied recordings of the 1906 seismic waves made at 96 observatories around the world. Data from 12 of these observatories were good enough quality to be digitized, modeled, and then suggest a surface wave magnitude of 7.7. So that's how they came up with that.
Wow.
That's
so cool.
I know. The second guess was 7.9. That came from Wayne Thatcher, Grant Marshall, and Michael Lisowski of USGS. They have reevaluated the geodetic data from before and after the 1906 earthquake, and the offset of the fault line plane produces ground deformation over a broad region around the fault. The deformation manifests itself as changes in angles and distances between benchmarks and geodetic networks. I swear to God, this is like your niche right here, Bree.
I'm trying to get it.
Right? So they're basically using like geometry and math as well as engineering to figure out what happened at that time based on like, okay, we can see that this moved this much and this moved. Using the observed changes, they constructed models of the slip distribution on the fault plane, and they came up with 7.9. 8.3 came from the traditional magnitude of 8.25, or 8.3 comes from the Richter scale. Okay. That was developed in 1958. However, the Richter magnitude scale was developed for local earthquakes recorded on high frequency seismometers. The preferred descriptor for large earthquakes, which in low frequencies is the moment magnitude as used by Thatcher, which was the 7.9. The magnitude is directly proportional to the energy release and can be obtained from analysis of broad spectrum seismograms, or from the product of the rupture area and the average fault slip. So they would take like an average of like the fault slip here was 20. The fault slip here was 21. The fault slip here was 22. The fault slip here was 18.
Okay.
An average. So each unit step in moment magnitude is the equivalent roughly to a factor of 32 in energy release. So if you're using math, thus it will require roughly 30 of the 1989 moment magnitudes of 6.9 Loma Prieta earthquakes to occur simultaneously to equal the energy that was released in the one in 1906.
Yeah.
So even though Loma Prieta was a 6.9, right? It would take 30 of those happening at the same time along the entire fault line to say this is the amount, to match the movement that they had. I was
so
like,
crazy.
Holy shit, that is a lot. So
yeah, imagine being like experiencing that.
Right?
Terrifying.
I can't. I don't want to.
After reading some
of the personal stories, I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like some of these people. The interesting thing too was that there was the only stories I found were all male. And I don't know if it was a product at the time because it's like, okay, they didn't really take into account like, oh, women were, you know. But like some of the stories talked about how men would get up, leave, go and rescue and like do this and watch the city burn and blah, 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 blah. And then they would go get their wives. It's like, okay,
wow.
Where are we? Like a scrap to be left behind that, oh, don't forget the wife. You know, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Now the public, at least at the time, and even to this day, I think some people remember it as a more of a fire thing, like the 1906 fire. I found a lot of stuff that said the 1906 fire in San Francisco. And I was like, well, it was spawned by the earthquake.
Yeah.
And the shaking was equally as damaging as the fire was. So the fire would cause the shaking, pipes would burst, things would happen, things would light fire, da, da, da. And because so many of the fire stations were down, nobody was getting fires put out. So the city just hot and burn, baby. Big old blaze. Let's see. So what else do I have here? So one more important characteristic of the shaking intensity noted in Lawson's 1908 report. So there's a guy, I don't think I have his full name, something Lawson. He did a report in 1908 of the 1906 earthquake. His information was actually, it's still kind of used to this day to determine. It's just a very articulate and very detailed study. So the report was clear, was the clear correlation of intensity with underlying geologic conditions. Areas situated in sediment-filled valleys sustained stronger shaking than nearby bedrock sites. The strongest shaking occurred in areas where ground reclaimed from San Francisco Bay failed in the earthquake. Modern seismic zonation practice accounts for the differences in seismic hazard posed by varying geologic conditions. So they look at the geologic condition of an area and they determine, okay, this is where we need to build, or no, we shouldn't build here because of seismic activity. Mm-hmm. So he's been used ever since. It remains the authoritative work as well as arguably the most important study of a single earthquake. So this guy Lawson was pretty important in terms of like doing the research on this particular earthquake and publishing it for people to know, hey, you don't want to live here because you're going to get your shit shaken down. So damage stats. So 3,000 were directly or indirectly killed by this. And at the time, the San Francisco population was only 400,000. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bree, if you want to do the fractions there or what the percentage of that is, 3,000 of 400.
Almost 1%, actually.
It would be 1. I think it's 1.
Yeah, it would be 1%. So it's under 1%. But still, 3,000 people is a lot of people. That's like the Twin Towers and stuff. That's a huge chunk of people.
It's a lot. Yeah. The worst part, though, it left 225,000 people homeless.
Like
it destroyed homes.
And so half of who survived didn't have anywhere to lay.
They talked about people moving outside of town. There were several accounts of people going to, of course, south of San Francisco and, of course, north of San Francisco, going to the east or the west. I guess it can't go to the west anymore. There was people that were in boats, actually. They did list people that were living on boats. 28,000 buildings were destroyed and big chunk of those were ruined. Yeah. $400 million was the cost of the earthquake and $80 million of that was the earthquake alone. That was in their money, not nowadays.
1906 time. Whew.
So that's a lot of damage. 80% of the city was destroyed on average. So 80%. That was pretty intense. So I thought it was kind of neat. I was reading some of these stories from sfmuseum.net and there was one guy who indicated that he had gone out to seek breakfast. Like, you're gonna seek breakfast after the city is destroyed and burning in flames. Sure. He said there was a hotel called the St. Francis that was giving out free breakfast. And I was like, that's amazing. I don't know if St. Francis is still there. I didn't do any research on that, but I would love to know if it still is. Or if there's people who know of that time or when that occurred, but that is pretty awesome. So they were giving out free breakfast. I thought that was great.
That is great.
I read a story or a letter from Peter Bacigalupi. I think I'm saying that right. Bacigalupi.
I'll take it.
Italian. I'm going to go with that because Baci is like it's B-A-C-I. So that's like,
Is that Baci or Baci?
Is it Baci?
Baci. I think you're Baci. Yeah. So I'm thinking Lucia, which is when it's a C. I think you're right. Go on.
Peter Bacigalupi, he was a phonograph, piano, and slot machine maker. So he was very well known and was quite wealthy. He said that, he went through quite a lot. He lost quite a lot. He, at one point, I think I was reading in one of his, in his story, he said he was speaking with a gentleman who was watching the flames burn in town and was petrified because he spent so much money on this building that he owned. So he, Peter, offered him $500 for the lease, knowing full well that it was going to burn down. So at least he would have something because the guy didn't have insurance.
Oh, and wow.
He said the guy fervently dismissed him, and literally 30 minutes later, the building burned to the ground. So he missed out. He could have gotten at least $500.
Yeah.
But he got nothing. He said everything that he went through, all the trials and tribulations of the earthquake, the fires, getting everything back together. And it took a very long time to rebuild that city. I think I was reading somewhere that it was almost 9 years before a lot of stuff was rebuilt. He said, regardless of all of those ordeals, I am going to stick with Frisco. I was like, oh, so this is a guy whose heart was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to leave. So, martial law was initiated at that time when the earthquake occurred. It was initiated by General Funston. And the best part about that is that, I don't know if you know, Fort Funston is the dog beach.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's a huge dog beach where it's very encouraged that once you get out of your car, you take your dog off the leash and let them roam freely.
Aww.
Yeah. So it's very safe and it's very secluded. Lots of hills, lots of sand. We took Nina there and she did amazing. And yeah, she absolutely loved it. So I was like, oh my God, Fort Funston. I know that place. I know that general. So that's, I thought, awesome. That was,
I love that.
Like, sweet.
Yeah. When you're like, oh, I know that name because
I know that name. I'm like, oh my God, Fort Funston. Is it the same one? So I was super stoked. Let's see. Okay. So let me go back here because again, tipping my hat to good old Michelle, I wanted to give you some crazy earthquake facts. Cause I don't think I've done that before. Even with the Loma Prieta earthquake, I didn't give you just some general, crazy earthquake facts. So I found this one called livescience.com, this website, and it's an article from 2010. Earthquakes have been more seismically active in the past 15 years. So at 2010, that would have been since 1995, which I would agree with. Not all seismologists agree, but for the most part, I think all of us can say that we have definitely felt much seismic activity. It could be perhaps the presence of social media and news, that it's a little bit more prevalent, that we see it in all areas all over the world.
So yeah,
that's probably more accurately the situation than just being more active, but who knows. San Francisco is moving towards Los Angeles at a rate of 2 inches per year. I mean,
really?
We like them and all, but God.
I didn't know that.
We're closer to them. The same pace as the growth of your fingernails as the two sides of the San Andreas Fault slip past one another. The cities will meet in several million years. However, this north-south movement also means that despite fears, California won't fall into the sea. Sorry, y'all. You ain't getting waterfront property in Nevada.
Caleb has a tattoo where California split. And like at the San Andreas Fault and the ocean. But it's also part of a song, to be fair.
True.
But yeah, it's just funny that, because that's what we say, like it's going to break off into the ocean, but no, not quite.
Another interesting fact, Mark, March is not an earthquake month, despite what some people believe. True, on March 28th, 1964, Prince William Sound, Alaska experienced a 9.2. One of the biggest ever. I'm going to have to research that because that's awesome. It killed 125 people and caused $311 million in property damage. And on March 9th, 1957, the Andreoff Islands, Alaska, felt a 19.1 tremor. But the next three biggest U.S. earthquakes occurred in February, November, and December. The devastating measure earthquake of Chile in 2010 struck on February 27th, and the huge 9.3 that spawned devastating Indian Ocean tsunami that I discussed, I think, what was it, six episodes or eight episodes
ago? Good few episodes ago.
Yeah, occurred on December 26th. So it's not always March. There's about 500,000 earthquakes a year around the world as detected by sensitive instruments. 100,000 of those can be felt or 100 can cause damage.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The sun and moon cause tremors. It's long been known that they create tides in the planet's crust. Everybody knows about the tides of the moon. So yes, that does affect tremors. Another interesting fact, a city in Chile moved 10 feet. 10 feet, cool. Y'all. A whole city just up and moved 10 feet. It's like it just gathered legs and was like, I'm just going to go plant myself over here. Bye, y'all.
I'm over this spot. I got some butt sores.
A little too sunny. I actually looked at some freaking awesome pictures online. I'm going to see Brie if I can send you them for social media upload. But one showed a piece of fence in like Benicia, California. And it was like 8 feet away from the rest of the fence. Just,
oh, wow.
I mean, straight up shift. It was intense. I'm like, oh man, I gotta get a pic. Oh yeah, it's awesome. So there's a couple of really great photos that I definitely want to send over to you. Number seven, there's no such thing as earthquake weather. Statistically, there is equal distribution of earthquakes in cold weather, hot weather, rainy weather, and so on, according to the USGS. Scientists say there's no physical way that weather could affect forces several miles beneath the surface. I would 100% have to agree with that. Earthquakes are not caused by like a certain sunlight or a specific wind blowing. You know, the tides, that's something different. That has to do with something extraplanetary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
This is in the Earth's crust. It's very, very deep. So I think that when you have a tide changing, it can influence, you know, how it's hitting the surface of the ground and then it's pounding these like, you know, land areas. And over time, yes, maybe that would be like, okay, it would kind of push a shift of some sort, but definitely no such thing as earthquake weather.
Yeah. It's not like a tornado when like the sky turns green or whatever, you know?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Can turn, you know?
Right. Interesting fact number eight, Earth's bulge was trimmed a little in 2004. Remember I told you that things happened and there was actual shift. It caused a small reduction in the bulb, making the planet more round. I was like, what?
So funny.
Insane. The Pacific Ring of Fire is the most geologically active region of Earth. I'm sure all of you followers know that the Ring of Fire is pretty awesome. There's lots of stuff always occurring there.
You know it from our song.
Also that too, Ring of Fire. Thank you, Johnny Cash. Now, interesting fact number 10, oil extraction can cause minor earthquakes. We know this. We see this with fracking. We see this with oil drilling. You're displacing the earth. Hello. Of course it's going to cause an earthquake. Interesting fact number 11, the largest earthquake ever recorded was a magnitude 9.5 in Chile on May 22nd. Again, my birthday, 1960. Okay, so there's two major on my birthday, Joplin tornado and this earthquake in Chile.
Should have made you PDS.
No, it just means I'm a force to be reckoned with, bitches.
Oh. Oh.
Oh. My last two little factoids, quakes on one side of the earth can shake the other side. Seismologists studying the massive 2004 earthquake in the Indonesian area triggered killer tsunamis throughout the Indian Ocean found that the quake had weakened at least a portion of California's famed San Andreas Fault.
Interesting.
Right? So the Chilean quake of 1960 shook the entire earth for many days, a phenomenon called oscillation that was measured by seismic stations around the planet. And I remember reading when I was researching this 1906 earthquake about a place over in Germany that had some of the most accurate information. And I was like, wait, Germany? I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, because that's the instrumentation they were using at the time. And it was accurate.
Yeah.
And of course, you saw that like Japan had information about stuff that happened when we didn't have data. So yeah, super, super, like just super informative. And last, the from lifescience.com, an interesting factoid about earthquakes that not many people know. The deadliest earthquake ever struck January 23rd, 1556 in Shanxi, China. 830,000 people are estimated to have died. So I don't know how much information we would actually find on that given its time frame. 1556 is not something that's well documented, even though Chinese have good documentation. I can't tell you that I'm good translating Chinese. So I don't know how much I'm going to actually do research on that, even though it's fascinating. So that's the 1906 earthquake, y'all. It was devastating.
I'm so glad you did that, because that's a really, and like you're talking about the fire, like it's just a really popular disaster that happened.
Well, it's popular here because, San Jose, we have the Winchester Mystery House. That house was actually affected. She lost a couple turrets, we went into a room that had, she had plaster and lath in certain rooms, and some of those were all knocked clean, and like you could see that they didn't recuperate it because they wanted to sort of keep it in a memory, like, hey. Yeah. This happened. So like, you can actually see effects from the 1906 earthquake.
Yeah. So that That was some good information. I love like facts. So it's nice to have like some 10 earthquake facts of things and things to like debunk myths or just kind of like, oh, like there is no such thing as earthquake weather. Cause I think that's popular. That's a thing that people say. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a thing. You also can't really.
Oh my God, it's earthquake weather. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not.
Are you a true crime addict? Do you find yourself talking serial killers and missing persons at parties only to be met with uncomfortable smiles? Well, find your tribe on True Crime Snack Time, a daily podcast that gives you a little true crime snack to chew on. From January 1st to December 31st, you'll find out what happened on this day in true crime. Short, sweet, and chock full of crime, join me, Allison, on True Crime Snack Time. We're available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Follow True Crime Snack Time on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Crime Snack Pod. And remember, keep your friends close and your snacks closer.
Ready to hear about a bridge?
I am always ready to hear about a bridge.
Heck,
take it to the bridge.
So we're talking about Galloping Gertie. So
Galloping Gertie.
That's
like,
what
GERD, like GERGURGERT. Gertie.
Like the name, like as if it's like Gretchen.
Gertie. Got it. Gertie. Got it.
So
like
my yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So my resources is that Wikipedia. I got some information on simscale.com, which is a blog, and also got information on ws.w.gov. A lot of it was just kind of cross-referencing information and getting some personal information, like first-hand experiences.
Ah, yes.
So there is actually currently a Tacoma Narrows Bridge, but the first Tacoma Narrows Bridge opened on July 1st, 1940, that spanned over Tacoma Narrows Strait of Puget.
Is this the one that has the footage?
Yes.
I looked that up because I thought that was the 1906 earthquake. It is not. It is your disaster. How crazy is that?
Yeah. So I'll probably post it in the description of this. Like, the Thunder Snow video, I posted a whole bunch of videos in the description of the people seeing the Thunder Snow. And so this one, I might post a video. They actually recently came out with a video, which I talk about in here. They found another video that they released from the other side of the bridge. So, it spanned over the Tacoma Narrow Strait of Puget.
Yeah.
It's like, I was listening to My Favorite Murder and they said Willamette. And everyone's like, Willamette. And she's like, but it says William. And it's like, no, it doesn't. There's not a second I. It's Willamette. The Strait of Puget Round connecting Tacoma and the Kitsap Pensacola.
Nice.
Peninsula.
Okay.
Not Pensacola.
I knew exactly what you meant, though.
Yeah. I love it. I'm getting better. And when I see it, too, I want to say Puget, but I know it's Puget. Puget.
Pew, 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 pew. Yes. Pew, 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 pew. Exactly.
So it was designed by Leon Mousseff, and it was a suspension bridge that was 5,989 feet long, which is a bit over a mile. So it's a little bit over a mile long. A mile is 5,280 feet. It was divided by three different sections, and the center was a 2,800 foot chunk and about 1,100 foot on each side of that center chunk.
Okay.
The bridge was the world's longest suspension bridge by main span. Yeah, I think I need to start drinking before these. I feel like I talk better.
Yeah.
Because planners expected fairly light traffic volumes, the bridge was designed to with two lanes, and it was just like 39 feet wide. So it wasn't super wide. Construction started September 1938. As the deck was built, it was not time before it would begin moving up and down when it was windy. So the workers began to call Tacoma Narrows Bridge Galloping Gertie.
No way.
So this movement didn't cease after construction, though when it was built and ready for traffic, a mild to moderate wind could cause alternating halves of the center span to visibly rise and fall several feet over 4 to 5 second intervals, each with some attempt to control this. Or even with some attempts to control this, there wasn't any solution that actually limited the galloping. So they tried a couple, like, what they thought engineering wise, where they got like trestles and those broke, and they tried to do a plate, but the plate actually caused almost like a sail effect, like as if it was a sail on a boat effect to catch more wind.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
So they were just trying different things that weren't working. So, oh my God. One way to kind of imagine it too, of like, so that center line, the yellow center line of the bridge, imagine that as, you know, that part doesn't move, but then one of the roadways will go up and the other one will go down, and then they'll twist back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fucking terrifying to be on. That during construction and after it was built, it was doing this. Ugh, and there's like, they were so just trying scary. To figure it out. Yeah. Totally.
I remember seeing on the video where there was a guy like walking on it while it was just wobbling. And I was like, are you kidding me right now?
Oh yeah, I got to tell you all about those people too.
The last thing that I saw when I was looking up that video, because again, I remember when people talking about the 1906 earthquake, they were like, "Oh, the bridge," and I was like, "No, that was." I'm sorry, I'm like, I was like, "That wasn't that one," and I was like, "That was much later footage. People were even dressed differently." So yeah. I remember seeing that video and going, "No, that's not the right one." So I actually researched and looked up. Like, I just started going like wobbling bridge earthquake. You know, get that, and I finally found it, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is awesome!" I was like, "This is Helmer Bridge," and I was thinking to myself, "This should be one of the ones I look at." And then you did it, so that worked out great. But
love it.
You know what's really crazy? This episode now needs to be like, I don't know, like we should title it like misinformation or like the wrong story or something. You know what I mean? Because it's like, people oftentimes think that video film is from the 1906 earthquake, and it's not. It's not
the old switcheroo.
There was no earthquake that even caused the Tacoma issue.
Yeah, no, it wasn't an earthquake. It's an engineering flaw.
Correct.
And this is because I heard about this from my friend Mike, who told me about the walkway, the Hyatt walkway one. And then we talked about this. So I've looked up other engineering fuck ups essentially as well. Only 4 months later, on November 7th at 11 a.m., a 42-mile-per-hour wind came through, causing an aeroelastic flutter. And a flutter is a dynamic instability of an elastic structure in a fluid flow caused by positive feedback between the body's deflection and the force exerted by the fluid flow.
So do they have other examples of this? Like, I don't know.
I couldn't.
I'm trying to think of another example as other than a suspension bridge where something like that would occur.
Yeah.
They came up with a theory, right?
It's a thing. Yeah. But I think the theory really came about after this, cause it has to do with, like the vibration and how it hits. It's a very specific way that it hits, that it does it, which kind of goes into here. Let me, cause there's a little bit more information and kind of like breaks it down a little bit more.
Good. I love more information.
More. Normal winds produced the aeroelastic flutter that matched the bridge's natural frequency. And so Galloping Gertie gave it her most galloping of all times. Oh my God.
The all time gallop of gallops.
I forgot I wrote this like that. Galloping Gertie gave it her most gallop of all times.
The gallop of gallops. Go, Gertie.
Yes, the gallop of gallops. Four collapse as the 40-mile-per-hour wind hit the bridge, began to twist. And that's the left side of the bridge roadway went down. The right side went up and back and forth. And this was
The famous footage.
Yeah. And this was caused by torsional vibration mode, which is what caused the audioelastic flutter.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the footage.
Yeah, so if you include this, I don't know if you'll include the whole video or a link to the whole video, but there's, you see that, you know how like they have a large cable that goes up to like this little pinnacle, and then it comes down, and then it goes up to the next one, and so on. So that cable has the smaller cables that actually suspend the bridge, right?
Yeah.
So those large cables, they have a housing, and there was a video online of them just going boom, boom, side to side, side. Side in the housings. And I was like, how is this allowed? Like, I understand that they build buildings to allow them to withstand wind and movement and earthquakes and things like that. So they are supposed to kind of wobble a little bit. Otherwise they would collapse. Right. So yeah. I get that. But the amount of elasticity in this bridge is shocking. Shocking to watch.
Pretty intense because like I was saying during construction, it was happening too. And I think it has something to do with the plans. Cause I think originally they were going to go for another plan, but they switched it and were like, no, we should do this. And I don't know if there's like not enough research done on it at the time, but definitely now, like I said, like this is taught in classes, in engineering classes and physics classes, because it caused this thing, this like flutter thing to happen, which is really interesting. And it's like more than just the wind hitting it, it causes, oh God, what's the word? Like this event, I guess, to happen, this science thing to happen that isn't what you would think would happen, if that makes sense. Right. Like, because like that twisting and that flutter and the vibration, and it's like, oh, it's on the same vibration mode and the same, what's the word they use? Oh, natural frequency.
Yes. So that's exactly what I was looking at here. So I just was like, flutter in engineering. I'm just going to Google that, see what happens. Aeroelastic flutter, correct? That's what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is defined as an unstable, self-excited, they're doing something to themselves, structural oscillation at a definite frequency where energy is extracted from the airstream by motion of the structure.
Yeah.
So they're pulling energy, making them flutter or move even more because of that said wind.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Right. So eventually the amplitude of the motion produced by fluttering increased beyond the strength of a vital part. In this case, the suspension cables. So once several cables failed, the weight of the deck transferred to the adjacent cables that broke in turn until almost all the central deck fell into the water below the span.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like a quote directly from, one of the sites.
So in Wikipedia, it actually says, excuse me, it actually says that it's in bridges and aircraft. That's frightening.
Yeah. But aircraft. So, I mean, like this was 1940. So like they know now, you know, like they know
they better. I'm not going on something that wiggles like that.
No,
that sounds like a ride.
So Leonard Coatsworth, a Tacoma News Tribune editor, was the last person to drive on the bridge. And he says, I quote, "Around me, I hear concrete cracking. I started back to the car to get the dog." There was a dog. It was his daughter's dog in the car.
Oh.
"But was thrown before I could reach it. The car itself began to slide from side to side on the roadway. I decided the bridge was breaking up and my only hope was to get back to the shore. On hands and knees most of the time, I crawled 500 yards or more to the towers. My breath was coming in gasps. My knees were raw and bleeding. My hands bruised and swollen from gripping the concrete curb. Towards the last, I risked rising my feet and running a few feet at a time, safely back at the toll plaza. I saw the bridge in its final collapse. I saw my car plunge into the narrows."
Oh! So,
that's the guy you see. That's the guy that you see running off the bridge. And there's another guy that goes out to try to help.
Okay. So yeah, I remember seeing that too. I just am in awe of how much this thing is moving. It's like it's rubber.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally just going.
Yeah. And again, not from earthquake, just from the wind.
That is crazy. I can't imagine.
And it says that somebody tried to save the dog, but the dog bit him. So like the dog was terrified in the car. And like,
well, you son of a bitch, don't get scared. Yeah. Okay.
Oh my gosh. So Tubby, Coatsworth's Cocker Spaniel, was the only fatality of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge disaster. Tubby. He was lost along with Coatsworth's car. Professor Farquharson, and I wish I was kidding, but that's what it says. And a news photographer attempted to rescue Tubby during the lull, but the dog was too terrified to leave the car and bit when the rescuers. Tubby died when the bridge fell and neither his body nor the car were recovered.
Wow.
This disaster is taught in physics books as an example of resonance. In fact, this disaster was suggested to me by my engineering student friend. This collapse helped influence the future design of long-span bridges.
Wow.
I bolded a couple quotes from a couple people that I thought were most interesting. Mm. So FB, the professor, one of the main quotes he has says, "I thought she was going to be able to fight it out. So he said, at least six lampposts were snapped off when I watched. A few minutes later, I saw a side girder bulge out. But though the bridge was buckling up at an angle of 45 degrees, I thought she would be able to fight it out. But that wasn't to be. I saw the suspenders, the vertical cables, snap off and a whole section cave in. The bridge dropped from under me. I fell and broke one of my cameras. The portion where I was had dropped 30 feet when the tension was released.
Wow.
So, and then the college student I was talking about, there's a quote, Winfield Brown, 25-year-old college student, decided to walk on it shortly around 10 a.m. that morning. Said, I decided I'd like to go get a little fun out of it before he was getting so gnarly. I know.
After those are the people that jump in waves before a hurricane.
Exactly.
Good job, buddy.
After walking to the tower on the other side and back, I decided to cross again. It was swaying quite a bit. After time, I got to the center and the wind seemed to start blowing harder. All of a sudden, I was thrown flat. A car came up, and about that time, the driver got out, walked, and crawled on the other side. We didn't have time for any conversation. Time after time, I was thrown completely over the railing. When I tried to get up, I was knocked flat again. Chunks of concrete were breaking up and rolling around. My knees were torn out of my pants and my knees were cut and torn.
Oh, geez.
No, all the knees there. I don't know how long it took to get back. It seemed like a lifetime. During the worst parts, the bridge turned so far that I could see the Coast Guard boat in the water beneath.
Ah! Holy macaroni.
So those, I just want to like highlight those, things. I will say that Coatsworth, the guy who puppy passed away, he said that the worst part of it all was that he would have to go back home and tell his daughter that her puppy passed away.
Yeah.
It makes me mad that like they even crossed the bridge. You don't really have a lot of choice, I guess. And it like seemed like a normal thing that would happen anyways, but I don't know.
They're like, oh, it's a little windy. The bridge is moving. I mean, I guess you would think that if you're like walking across a suspension bridge that like, it's a walkway, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's going to move and it's going to flutter and it's going to, you know, like, so I guess people weren't really thinking of it as like a danger because it happened before and it's okay. And it's, you know, so.
Seems terrifying to me. Am I right?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I would look at it and be like, no, I'll stay over here.
Yep.
I'm not crossing that. I'm not crossing that. I'm good. Ugh. That's insane. Why would anyone do that?
They did eventually rebuild the bridge better.
Yes.
This is, like I said, engineering fail that they teach in classes and also in physics because of the event and all the sciencey things that happen.
All the sciencey things. You know those sciencey things.
Those sciencey things.
Can't get into it.
Yeah. So that's the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, also known as Galloping Gertie.
Cool. That is amazing. And it's really funny because like I didn't think that I would actually know. Like I was thinking, okay, she's going to talk about this. And I'm like, all right, I don't know anything about that. But I did a little background research thinking it was related to my own disaster.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's yours.
It's mine. And I will post at least one of the videos onto the description.
For sure. Very cool stuff. You definitely need to watch it. Give it a watch.
Pretty it's worth good it. Filming. Like it's 1940s.
It's great.
I
mean, it's really clear. Mm-hmm. You can see just how much the bridge is moving. You can see the collapse. So it shows it from the beginning. And the crazy part is like, there's this one part in the video where like these people are just kind of walking like underneath the bridge. So if you think of like, you know, when I was there in like St. John's, there's those areas where like the breweries and stuff are. So the bridge is in the background and they're just walking like it's nobody's, no big deal.
Like it happens every day.
Bridge is moving again.
What's interesting about some of the footage is like listeners, if you watch it, know that some of the footage has been sped up because there was a miscalculation in the frames per second or whatever. And
yeah,
so,
I read that.
So when they were trying to like make it up to like what it would be, they accidentally sped it up a little. But still, I mean, seeing that movement, oh my gosh, it's crazy.
I can't imagine being on that bridge. Are you kidding? Yeah. Like, no. Absolutely not.
Good thing there was no like people who passed away, but poor Tubby, that puppy.
Aw, Tubby. Mm, we're going to miss you, Tubby.
Tubby.
Rest in peace.
Galloping Tubby from now on.
Galloping Tubby. There it is. Dun, 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 dun. We're going to miss you, buddy.
Yes, indeed.
Well, that was awesome.
That was. Oh, I want to.
It's hella fun.
I really enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed my research. I love hearing, I think hearing about the earthquake finally, that was on my like wish list to hear, I guess, or like bucket list.
A lot affected by it for sure.
Yeah. And I want to bring up, so we were talking about how we'd love to highlight nonprofit organizations that do amazing stuff. And there's so many. Oh, if you go onto any of our social media profiles, there is a link to natural disaster relief funds. Right away, we put that on there. So ShelterBox is one of the disaster relief funds. They give shelter kits, and it says having somewhere dry and warm to sleep, to prepare meals, be with your family is vital for starting the long process of rebuilding your life. So ShelterBox teams work disaster hit families around the world, offering emergency shelter and other essential items to support them in rebuilding their lives. So if you would like to donate a look more into ShelterBox, please look at shelterbox.org.
Yes.
We want to, again, because we talk about these, we want to highlight some of the organizations out there that are trying to help those who are experiencing different disasters. So please consider checking out ShelterBox and seeing.
And donating.
If you can help. Yeah, and donating. We appreciate it so much.
For sure.
And eventually we will have like some things that we might make an item where the profit, so much of the profit goes to nonprofits. We're working on that now, though.
Yeah. Works in progress.
But yeah, I mean, we also just love doing this podcast. It's so much fun. It's a chance for me and Brett to talk. And yeah, apparently we have listeners. I know people talk. I've talked to some people, some friends who mentioned that it's nice to know, like, oh, people actually are listening.
Yes. Important.
So thank you, everyone. Oh my gosh. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it.
We love you.
We do. It gets me all giddy.
We love you so much. We love you like your mom loves you.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if any of my family listens to it. My dad was talking to his nurse who I went to school with about the podcast.
I actually mentioned today to one of my barbacks, I said something about going home to do a podcast. He's like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, this one. And I showed him the back of my phone case and he goes, particularly dangerous situation, a disaster podcast. You do a podcast? I was like, yeah. He goes, is it on Spotify? I said, yes, it is. Yeah. And he goes, oh my God, I'm totally listening to it. I'm like, yes, please rate and subscribe.
I love how amazed people are when they find out we do podcasts.
Like, and they're like, what? We're, no, look, I'm not famous. Okay.
No, no, we're not fancy. Anyone can do a podcast. Like,
anyone can do a podcast.
Anyone could do this.
For sure. And of course, please send in your suggestions. Because if you have disasters we haven't heard about, you've heard us in this episode. We were reading stuff and we're like, oh my God, I didn't even know about this. You know, so there's
exactly
some stuff that I was reading about that I didn't know, or, you know, things that, like, you know, we were just like, wow, I had no idea about that. So interesting factoids or disasters that you want us here cover in our own special way, then please definitely write us to our email.
pdangerous situation. That's right. It's pdangerous situation@gmail.com.
And that's P as in Paul. P as in particularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Brett said, we really do love suggestions of disasters, because almost like every couple recordings we do, Brett tells me about one that I've never heard about and I love it. Yeah. So please give us your personal experiences. Tell us about a disaster that you are interested in. Maybe it's a local one. I love it when Brett tells me one that I have no idea about. And I learned so much
surprise
stuff, which is most of the ones she's talked about, I had no idea about, which is what I love.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, we really would love to do some listener episodes eventually, but
for sure.
Listener experiences. Yes.
Yeah. We love them.
Yes.
We love all of them.
We do.
And we love you guys.
We do. Come hang out with us. Come tweet us. If you tweet us at PDS Podcast, we'll tweet back. If you
she'll tweet back. I don't know how to use Twitter.
I'm gonna teach Brett to tweet.
But I will definitely respond in kind on the Insta. And actually, tell me what you guys think, because I did the last Insta. But yeah, hit us up on the Insta. Give us a follow. Give us a like. Make a comment. Tell us if we suck or we're awesome. We'll take both of them.
Yeah,
gladly and kindly.
And you know? If you talk, we'll talk back, and I will teach Brett to tweet so you can have conversations with her as well. I'm going to teach her all the things.
Sorry.
I don't remember.
Before it gets too out of control.
Yeah.
And you hear the rest of our amazing singing and I break things.
Break the mic.
Break things. All right. We love you guys. Keep listening. We're going to have more episodes coming up.
Yay. Bye.
Bye. Oh,
duck and cover.
Cover, bitches.